this is your Polycast for Monday, October 24th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, a close race in the 8th District, and the chair of the Senate Tax Committee faces a tough re-election fight. DFL Congressman Rick Nolan and his Republican challenger Stuart Mills debated the issues in their campaign last night on KSTP-TV. The economy and government energy policy are vital to many of the voters of northeastern Minnesota's 8th Congressional District, and the two sparred over those issues. They also took opposite positions on a proposed increase in the federal minimum wage. First Stuart Mills, then Rick Nolan.
It should be the states that are deciding what the correct minimum wage is for their state. We should not have Washington, D.C. bureaucrats decide for all 50 states what should go on inside their borders when it comes to minimum wage.
Well, we are one nation, and I think everybody in this country who's willing to go to work and put in 8 hours, 40 hours a week, they're entitled to an income that allow them to live with some modest degree of comfort.
That was Rick Nolan and Stuart Mills. The 8th Congressional race is one of the most closely watched in the nation and one of the most expensive. A new KSTP poll shows that Mills is up by 4 points, but the poll has a margin of error of plus or minus 4 percentage points. A powerful northern Minnesota state senator is facing one of his toughest campaigns. DFL incumbent Rod Skoy chairs a major Senate committee, and Republicans are pushing hard to unseat him. The outcome could help determine whether Democrats retain control of the Senate next year. Dan Gunderson has the story.
Senate District 2 covers a huge area in north-central Minnesota, from Wadena to the Canadian border. Voters here first sent Rod Skoy to the Senate in 2002. He chairs the powerful Senate Taxes Committee, which has a major role in crafting tax and budget plans for the state. The farmer from Clearbrook has been reelected 3 times by comfortable margins, but this year might be different. Skoy says outside groups are targeting him with mailers, commercials, and social media campaigns.
This outside money flowing into the district, this is the first time that I've had this kind of campaign. I don't know where it's going to end up.
Skoy says he's not sure how to respond to some of the attacks. One Facebook ad shows Skoy with former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg, who spent millions promoting gun control legislation.
They photoshopped Bloomberg in with me and tried to make people think that I was working with him to take away their guns. Clearly that's not the case. I'm endorsed by the NRA. So I think that that deception is problematic.
On that point, Skoy's Republican challenger agrees. Paul Utke is an insurance agent and serves on the Park Rapids City Council. He, too, has seen the special interest money pouring into Senate District 2 in the form of negative ads and mailers.
Which means we have no say in what those messages are. Those messages are from A to Z and usually don't have anything to do with reality. And I think as candidates, we'd much rather keep it on where we're in control and get our message out. But yeah, I don't know where this is going to end, but something needs to happen.
The parties have mobilized behind their candidates. Skoy is getting campaign help from Congressman Colin Peterson. Utke says the state Republican Party is helping his get-out-the-vote efforts. Both parties say voter turnout will be critical. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump is expected to do well here. Lots of Trump signs can be seen in small towns and along rural highways in the district. Republican Party Chairman Keith Downey thinks it will be a strong Republican year in northern Minnesota, not just because of a Trump effect, but because of hot-button issues like government regulation and spending.
The Republican Party, I think, is more aligned on those issues with average everyday folks as well. So all of that adds up, I think, to a really strong race and a great chance for Paul to prevail.
DFL Party Chair Ken Martin says the presidential campaign is creating uncertainty about who will turn out to vote. But he's not convinced a strong Trump turnout will hurt Senator Skoy.
People know Rod. They trust him. He's done a good job of being an independent voice in St. Paul. He's bucked his own party many times to stand up for his constituents, and I think because of that, he's in a great position to win.
Skoy says he's counting on personal relationships with voters and a record of bipartisan legislation to keep his Senate seat. Challenger Paul Utke thinks his promise of smaller government and more local control will convince voters to toss out the incumbent. Dan Gunderson, Minnesota Public Radio News, Park Rapids.
Allina's nursing strike finally ended last week, but it could be the start of a change in hospital labor relations nationwide. The nurse's 37-day walkout ended only after the rank and file reluctantly agreed to give up their generous union-only health insurance. Labor analysts say Allina's victory will shape other nurses' contract negotiations. Lorna Benson reports.
Allina Health won a major concession from its nurses when they agreed to switch from their cherished union health insurance to the hospital system's less expensive but still generous corporate health plans. Roger King is a labor attorney at the HR Policy Association based in Washington, D.C. He's represented numerous health systems on labor issues. King says Allina gained the upper hand in negotiations by simply carrying on with business as usual during the extended strike. The company hired 1,500 replacement nurses to fill shifts for almost 6 weeks.
Allina is to be congratulated, from my perspective, to continue its operations, to continue to offer health care services to the community virtually without interruption.
Allina took a hard line, saying there would be no deal unless nurses accepted givebacks on health benefits. King says many of his health system clients were closely following the Allina dispute because they also face unsustainable union health insurance bills. He says they'll probably adopt Allina's playbook.
For a large employer, unionized employer of Allina's size, to take a firm stance, as it did, I think probably emboldens other healthcare organizations around the country to consider the same approach.
Still, King says hospitals won't be looking for walkouts. Hiring replacement nurses is expensive and carries slightly more risk for patients. But King says the added risks and costs decrease as a strike wears on and the upfront expenses fade away. So hospitals might be more willing to endure a strike if there's hope they could substantially pare back their employee health costs over the long term. King believes the Minnesota Nurses Association, and by extension its national counterpart, National Nurses United, made a strategic blunder in calling an open-ended walkout. He says that put nurses in a tighter financial bind than Allina.
If I were advising the union, I would certainly want to reconsider the success of that kind of strategy.
That's exactly what the union is doing, according to NNU's collective bargaining director, Fernando Lasada. But he says at the time, an indefinite strike seemed to be the only way to budge an intransigent employer.
Would we do it differently? Maybe. Maybe we always learn from these experiences. We hope that the employer learned as well.
The lesson Lasada wants employers to take away is that nurses are willing to take a prolonged strike. NNU unions typically walk out for just a few days. Those walkouts tend to inflict a much heavier financial toll on hospitals than nurses, and they can be repeated many times, ballooning costs for employers while minimizing the financial pain for nurses. Lasada said his organization may reaffirm its preference for spot strikes following Minnesota's walkout. First, he says the union needs time to digest what happened and why. But he acknowledges the Allina settlement will make it harder for other nurses' unions to defend their current health benefits.
I think it does set a precedent. All these things always set a precedent.
This is kind of surprising.
Economist Joan Spetz is a professor in the School of Nursing at the University of California, San Francisco.
You don't usually see NNU lose in a union negotiation. They usually come out with at least a good share of what they are looking for.
NNU has taken forceful stances, which has helped the umbrella group rack up big wins for affiliates in some labor-friendly states. But Spetz says Minnesota's labor market may have been a disadvantage. Nurse negotiators here have to defend better-than-average pay and benefits. At the same time, there's a surplus of nurses. They provide a reservoir of replacements in a strike. Whether the labor market was a factor, Spetz says the union's choice of an open-ended strike could slow NNU's ability to win over nurses in other states.
You know, they may be feeling like this loss isn't great for them, but they are hoping to get big gains in some other states, and that might counteract this.
But if Allina's hardline bargaining sets a new standard for employers, nurse union leaders could face defections, and there were hundreds in the Allina strike. Nearly 1 in 7 nurses had agreed to cross the picket line by the end. Covering health, I'm Lorna Benson, Minnesota Public Radio News.
And that's your Polycast for this Monday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.